Hey everybody, welcome back to an all-new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I have the pleasure of presenting to you today a chat I had with Calvin and Hobbs, a very funny comedic duo from right here in Germany and Austria. Check it out.
I think we're good. I think we might have made it. Tim looks really, really scared right now.
I think we did it.
No, I'm fine now. I think I'm fine.
Okay, great.
Can you hear me? That's all that really matters at this point, I feel like.
Wait, say something again?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, good. Jordan can hear me. That's all that matters.
Dick.
Videos recording. Okay, great. Oh, man. You know, it feels like every time I do one of these, it's not just you guys. Like, it's every call. There's either... I almost feel like the nicer the recording equipment is, the longer it takes to get things set up without a team, you know, without like anyone else helping you.
We ran into this issue after we started shooting our stuff with a DSLR camera. Like, we started off doing iPhone.
Sure.
And honestly, at this point, we're at a point like we look at your videos and we're like, oh,
how easy that would
be. So nice. Shoot it on the iPhone. And edit it, get out, call it a day. But you know, now we have to set up the lobs, we have to set up the lights, we have to go through this whole process, and it's always fucking tedious. But at the end of the day, like, we want it to look a certain way.
The
quality is just different.
The quality is so high.
Exactly.
I guess we all have days like this where I just don't really have a well fleshed out idea, and I still want to have the posting, so I'll either do a continuation of a series I started, or just something really fast and really dumb, really, really just like get something out. And that's where it's so ideal to be doing it on the iPhone.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And
yes.
I can imagine, you know, you guys must have to plan so much in advance to do it in such high quality, because you're scheduling, you have to meet together. Who's doing the video and audio editing between you two?
That's Calvin. I do a rough cut. I get to pick all the fun bits and the fun performances. And then I send it over to Calvin and I say, enjoy 6 hours of doing audio and video correction. And, you know, luckily he's very skilled. Because
clearly.
If I were left to do it, I would still be shooting on iPhone. We'd still be shooting iPhone and we wouldn't be doing anything else.
You know, that's our like trade-off is like Tim will write the stuff and he'll come up with the ideas. And then like it'll be up to me to figure out how we shoot it. And, you know, it's like it's a nice partnership because we get the best of both worlds and we don't need a whole ass team around it. You know, so we kind of like gelled really well there.
I think that's so cool when teams can get as successful as you guys are and still keep it core.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice when you can afford to extend a team out, like, okay, well, our friend Mike comes out and does lights now, or like Sandra comes and like wants to, you know, bump up makeup or costumes, or I'm just making these names up. But
sure.
Like,
yeah.
It's so cool to, I think these days especially, have the availability to get to such a high quality and such a consistency of quality, and it's just like the two friends who started everything off together.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, friends is a strong word, but yes.
Sorry. Lovers. Sorry.
And I mean, also just, I mean, it makes it easier. It makes it easier to shoot, right? If you're just like a two-man team, at least, or I mean, for you as well, where you're just like one guy that gets to do it. So it's like you literally shoot whenever you feel like it and you can, and it's not, you know, like for us where we have to find the time. And I feel like if we expanded the team and made it even bigger, then it's even harder to find the time and the scheduling for all of it. So
for sure.
I mean, there's a small team. And then, yeah, we use Engine as well sometimes for bigger shoots. We use Calvin's brother and his team, and like they're super talented and like amazing at what they do. And you know, we're lucky that Calvin has all these connections, basically.
I mean, look, it's helpful to have like that production team, because then when we have bigger ideas or it's like something where we know we can't shoot it between the both of us, it's just, it's nice to have the help. You know, but there's certain parts where it'd be nice to like going forward, you know, maybe having some help with editing or something. But then it comes with all these caveats where you're like, okay, but then do they know how to edit in our style? Do they know how to make the cuts the way that we want them to? Are you going to spend more time teaching somebody than it takes you to do it? You know, and then it's like, is it worth that like time investment and money investment? And that's always the question.
That's the thing too. I've talked to a few different creators so far, like just trying to get a sort of a glimpse into the life of, you know, the handful of us that are mocking Germany, to simplify it the most. And a lot of people, including myself to an extent, you know, have this sort of feeling about, well, you know, we've gained traction with the way that it's done now. Mm. So the fear of handing that responsibility or any part of it to someone else creates a fear of losing control.
For sure.
Do you guys have that feeling too?
Yeah, I think losing a sense of control, but also just losing a sense of, like, I don't know. There's, like I said, I think the time investment is such a hard part. And then at the same time, it's a level of trust, because you know the way that you can produce something and you can make it look a certain way, and then you don't trust that somebody else is going to be able to do it. And I think letting go is really, really hard in that, but I think it's necessary. There are cases like, you know, the whole Mr. Beast thing, where it's like, now the quality is maybe starting to drop, and it's, you know, it's a thing of like, cool, you hand it off to somebody entirely, they don't care because it's not their product. It's just like, they're just gonna push out as many videos until people start dropping off, and then they move on to the next client, you know. So it's like, that's obviously the fear at the end of the day, if you let go completely.
What is there something that's going on with Mr. Beast? I don't know, am I missing something? Does he have an editor now that he, that people are complaining about?
Yeah, the agency that he's working with is like, there's like a sense of, is he pushing out, you know, too much content where it's starting to lose quality, or is it, yeah.
Interesting, interesting stuff.
What?
What is
this weird burn that you're trying to do now?
I'm not trying to do a burn. I'm trying to let's talk about it. You know, how do we feel about it?
I honestly
hot takes in this.
Is this a bit? Are we doing a bit?
We need to have hot takes in this podcast. We need to have hot takes.
We need to have hot takes. Okay, I don't like Inception the movie. Here we go. Okay, I don't
like it. Well, I don't think it's aged as well as the film bros have thought it aged as well either. That's not English. But I think that I wanted to ask, what's the first video that you guys remember making as you were getting traction where you handed off some of those responsibilities, and for better or worse, you thought, okay, well, now we're at a place where we have that option? Do you have a memory of a project that was kind of bigger than your usual stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the first one that we did was, we had this villain series, or we still do, but we haven't done one in a while. You know, round sunglasses turn into a villain. And it was a whole spoof on Indiana Jones and the German villain. And for that, we hired Engine, which is my brother's production company. And I don't know that it was a sense of like letting go, because in that specific scenario, we just knew that we needed the help to make it look the way that we wanted to. And if anything, it was just, I mean, at least for me, maybe not for you, Tim, but there was never a sense of like fear that it was going to hamper the process, only that it was going to help it. I think more so just we were trying to be respectful of their time when we were shooting, and then we were definitely guerrilla shooting that sketch at night, because it was in a public space that you weren't allowed to shoot at. And so, you know, we had a cop come up and tell us that we can't shoot there. So then I tried to say that we were film students and our university told us that we're allowed to shoot here. And they had called.
I was very proud of you. That was very Herzogian of you. I like that. That was beautiful.
She had said, okay, great. Can you pull up the paper? And I was like, oh, I don't have the paper on me. And she said, well, can I get your ID? And I said, oh my God, we left all of our IDs in the production office that is close by, because we were just a couple of feet away. And she was like, oh, that's interesting that you left your IDs. She caught on, obviously, after like a couple of minutes. But she was like,
yeah, but she was nice.
She was really nice. And she was like, look, can you be out of here in an hour? And I was like, absolutely. And then we did. We managed to get the whole thing in 45 minutes, which I don't know how, but we sped through that shoot.
Dude, that's like such a part of American culture that I miss so much living in Germany. There is this fire of like, you'll get people like this in charge occasionally, and sometimes they're not cool, of course. It's just person to person. Yeah. But more often than not, I mean, and we both have experiences like this, getting into a spot, you shouldn't really be there, you shouldn't really be doing that, but it's for a good reason, it's fun, it's harmless.
Sure, yeah.
And you have someone who's like, I don't know, some guy with a key to a door, and it's just like, all right, guys, 5 more minutes. And you're like, thanks, Mr. Jenkins.
You know, like, oh, it's the best.
Keep going.
I mean, yeah, it's But it's funny. It's the same thing with, I don't know if you know Kyle Gordon. He's blown up right now. Hats off to him.
Thank you. Kyle Gordon is, dude, I mean, he really popped off with this 90s European
music. Oh, my God.
The song is so good.
For
anybody, like anybody listening to this who doesn't know Kyle Gordon, this guy is so diverse.
Genius.
His range for characters is...
It's so fantastic. And he's such a nice guy, too. He's so lovely. We worked with him twice.
Oh, he's such the best.
He is.
Beck just
oh my God! Yeah,
it's like Seth. It's like Seth Rogen, but somehow it's weirder.
Exactly,
it's just as enjoyable.
But you know, it was the same thing where he shot that video, that first one, at Oculus, which is here in New York, and he got kicked out while shooting it. But you know, I guess it was all, you know, all worth it, all for a good cause. So I think Tim. Going forward.
Oh, but still, but the layers, this is like what shows, this is becoming a Kyle Gordon fan podcast, but like the layers to that bit, to
beautiful.
Do like Euro trash techno song, people who don't understand like English or American culture, and then to shoot it in like the World Trade Center mall is incredible.
I mean,
so smart.
Just the fucking wording, like the bad English translations.
I watched it today. I watched this. There's the second one now with a brunette. A brunette.
Yeah. It's the same song, but it's just a different girl.
It's the same song.
Yeah. The videos are so popular that there's like you know how there's like all, like, I don't know if you guys are keeping up with this. There's a lot of TikTok hate for this creator, Montaigne, the veggie cutter guy with the.
I saw that. Shitty advice. Yeah.
Oh, why is that? Why is the hate there?
Okay, I'll come back to Montaigne because that's a funny
trend.
Okay, great.
We're gonna do a lot of. We're doing TikTok talk. We're gonna do all this. This is a gossip. This is a gossip show now.
But first, but Kyle's that video, or I mean, I know he's such a popular creator, but like that video of the first one with the blonde singer is so popular that there is now a chain of Stitch videos of people seeing the one with the brunette singer and going, "Hey, what happened to I forgot the funny name he gave her."
Yeah,
like,
the blonde one. Yeah,
I don't know if it's like Discolana Picotana or some silly name, and he was like, "What happened to her? You can't just replace her," you know.
Which is again. Shows again the level of genius, because this is what Eurodance acts would do when they got famous. They'd immediately release the song again and replace the main singer with a different attractive woman.
Dude, is that really the thought process?
There are layers to this bit. Like, this thing is, he's working on another level. He's incredible.
Oh, man. I'm so jealous that you guys got to... How did you meet him? How did you end up working with him?
We met him because Scumbag Dad actually hit us up. He was trying to shoot... Of course he did, yeah.
Another great creator.
He was coming to New York, and he had hit us up like a year before that already. And he had come to New York, and he was like, "Hey guys, let's shoot something together. I might bring somebody else," and that somebody else was Kyle Gordon. And we all hit it off during the shoot, and it was a lovely shoot. But, you know, we were like, "Hey, Kyle, like, do you want to do something together again at some point?" And he was like, "Definitely." So we hit him up a couple of weeks later, and we did our own bit with him. And that was it. And, you know, then he was really nice. He connected us to the Mets, actually, which was Tim's dream since we had started doing Calvin and Habs, was to work with the Mets. And that collab happened, which was amazing. And yeah, no, he's a really, really good guy, and he deserves everything that's happening right now. He was featured in Rolling Stones now because of that song.
Really?
Yeah. Rolling Stones did an article on his bit.
It's the song of the summer, dude.
Song of the summer.
Good for it.
Well, he's actually releasing it. He's releasing the song on Spotify on August 22nd.
As he should. The song is great, but it's also like all his other bits are. He's, of course. He's fantastic. He does good comedy.
Yeah, he's you know, there's so many comedians and sketch creators and on TikTok, and I think what's so hard about sticking out. Diaz, there's what's the woman? I'm such a huge fan, Delaney.
Oh yeah.
Delvaney. It's like I forgot her first name just now, but she has the black hair.
She has the cringy, like the girl who's like the worst woman in the movie.
She does so many super niche. I forgot her first name, but it's Delvaney.
It's Delaney. Yeah.
Is it Delaney?
Yeah.
Or Delvaney?
I'm pretty sure it's Delaney.
But there's like a few people who stick out in different ways.
Yeah.
But it's and I feel like Kyle and her I forgot her first name. That's going to drive me crazy.
Delaney Rowe. Yeah, you were right.
Delaney Rowe.
Yeah.
So Delaney is the first name. Okay. So Kyle and Delaney, there's something so extremely niche and like so like needle point precise about the person they're trying to create.
Oh, yeah.
And they do it so, they're so vulnerable on the camera. Like they put that cringe or that whatever they're trying to represent, they put it so out there, like on the cross, like just bare chested, and it's so impressive.
But I think you have to for that to work. Like there's no other way around it, you know.
They're so good. But I do want to talk more about you guys.
No. Let's talk. Wait, hold on. Let's go back to Montaigne for a second.
This is so much better.
What's going on with Montaigne? Tell Tim.
Explain that, please.
Do you guys know the Cadet Boyd train trend?
No, what is that trend?
Didn't he do a rap? Wasn't that the whole thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Cut A Board. That's, I don't know, you can't see it. Like C-U-H-D-E-Y, Cut A, and then-
Cut A Board?
Cut A Board. And he meant to say, because they're bored.
Oh, Cut A Board. Okay.
Cut A Board. And there was like two videos that sparked him off on this like, several hundreds of thousands of people stitching him with hate. And one of them was because he was trying to give what he thought was like hot takes on relationship advice while cutting vegetables. So that's like,
that's his thing.
The thing of him. Yeah. It's like the headphones and the kind of vegetable, but he was giving very, very obvious, pick me advice. That's very easy to mock. So that was just like, okay, this guy's easy to mock because he's giving stupid advice that doesn't make any sense. And then he was getting hate advice for that. So then he did a rap song.
Oh, no.
That was like,
oh, no.
He was like, he put on like a beat and was like, you know, you got to be good before you get great. And they're only complaining, cut a boy. And like this accent, he put on the black accent.
Yeah.
He put on the black voice. And dude, and then so the, then the black creators were like, I'm sorry, that didn't.
Oh, this is a white person?
Yes.
That didn't.
Yes.
Oh, he's, God.
I'm going to pull him up.
Why are you responding with a rap song to begin with? You
should never. Exactly. And he's like, he's not a rapper. You know, he's a content advice-ish creator guy. But that just reminded me, like, Kyle's, yeah, that's him. That's the, yeah.
Yeah, that's the stitch, yeah.
And lots of creators are like, I'm sorry, cut a boy.
We're gonna cut to the video, right? I hope you're not in the edit.
I'm going to put cut a boy in here now. That's true.
God.
Dude, but
well, I think Tim, like, you know, I know what to do next.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we
rap song. Hey,
I'm
here to sit.
You guys have done a duo for so long. Did you find it difficult to brainstorm with a third party, like with Kyle or with Scumbag Dad or anybody that you've joined in on a video, like from scratch? Like, how does the brainstorming process work for you guys on a video?
Ooh. I mean, usually I'll just sit down and I'll write out like some ideas if I come up with something, or Calvin and I will, you know, in passing, like while we're shooting something and then we talk about something that happened, we're like, hey, is that a sketch? And then like, we might talk about it briefly and just like, you know, have like some sort of like mental roadmap for if we were to do this sketch, what it would look like. But usually... I'm sorry, I'm going to put my dog in the crate because she just saw a skateboarder and now is complaining.
Now it's game over.
I guess I'll follow up with that. It's like, yeah, you know, usually Tim will come up with the ideas and then we'll kind of talk about them and see, you know, usually I'll be the bad guy and I'll be like, this is too long. How can we condense it down? And then from there, you know, like the stuff with Scumbag Dad and Kyle Gordon, like Scumbag Dad has... His brain works on a different level. Like, he came in with millions of ideas already fleshed out, and they're so abstract. But, you know, he has his process, and, you know, it just, like, it was, all right, let's just do your thing how you imagine it. And then our idea was very simple to incorporate, so it was more like, hey, like, kind of like, this is the outline, how do you feel about it? And they were both good to go, and we improvised it, like, four or five times, and then we were good to go. The one with Kyle, I think that one was a little bit more easy to collaborate on just because it was real Twitter posts. So it was just about like assigning people lines and that was pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, like, so you guys, I mean, you do outside of your successful videos have quite different careers that, you know, maybe people who have always followed you as the comedy duo might not know about. I feel that even like I'm not even on the same level as you guys, and I always get this occasional DM of like, I didn't know you played music. And for me, the first, you know, 29 years of my life were only focused on playing music, and now it's like a, now it's in such a different thing than what I thought. How do you guys feel about the original, you know, passions that you pursued perhaps as like, you know, young starry-eyed, you know, dreamers of being actors or directors or producers and like working in entertainment? Are you kind of now in a position that you thought younger version of you would be so happy to see you in? Or are you in still sort of a place where I like this, but what I really want to do is Broadway, for example?
Now this feels like a therapy question almost. So younger me would probably be pretty proud, but you know, for me specifically, like I played tennis growing up, so that was like my big dream. And then when that didn't work out, everything else after that just kind of felt like, okay, cool, let me just see like how I can make a good living and like feel somewhat fulfilled with the things that I do. Because nothing ever compares to that first dream that you had, that first passion, you know, like that's the thing. And then everything else is like, it's great, but it's not the same. So for me, like Tim and I started doing acting, and we did, or we still do, commentary for WWE.
And I think that's the craziest.
Yeah,
I mean, that's really the most fun,
but that's how we met. Yeah.
That's how you guys met, was working through WWE.
And both him and I just hit it off right away. You know, we got along really well from the first day that we got together. Like, I think we hung out for like the third time, and it was at a WWE show. It was at Royal Rumble. And one of the producers there was sure that we had been best friends for years. And so, you know, it just kind of speaks
best.
To
oh, yeah,
the chemistry that we had. Yeah. But then for me specifically, like once we started doing social media together, I had a short dabble in like producing social media content for like a client at that point as well, for like a brand. And that really then like fully developed for me, where I'm now doing a lot of social media production for different brands, and companies. And that's been really fun, because now I've seen how much I enjoy producing and helping people get there, rather than being in front of the camera myself. I still enjoy that a lot, but it feels more fulfilling in that, because I just get to have different experiences. So I think it's more so for me personally just about expanding that more, like working with more brands, building up a bigger team together with Tim specifically too, you know, like just building out that team of like people that we work with, that we create content with, whether it's for ourselves or for somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, I came here to pursue acting, and I feel like I've been able to do that for quite some time, so that's great. And now I get to work with my buddy all the time, and the hours are very easy. so yeah, I really can't complain. It's been very nice. I would like to maybe go back to Broadway or something later on down the line. I do miss the stage. Like stage mm-hmm. acting is great, and I wouldn't mind, you know, making movies, like expanding this into like actually something bigger, but there's a writer's strike going on and we're not SCAD.
That's what I want to get into as well with you guys. I mean, I know, you know, Calvin's completed the SAG after a certification. You did two, Tim, is that right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I do want to talk about this.
Did you look me up on LinkedIn?
I wouldn't be an interviewer if I didn't do some research. But I did also want to ask, and maybe it's a stupid question, and maybe you guys have had this 100 times before, but, you know, to be from Austria and Germany, which I think probably some people listening to this will be like, I'm sorry, they're like, I mean, at least Calvin, they'll say like, he's not American, you know, like, really not? Because the accent, I mean, even with you, Tim, I think this is probably something you pride yourselves on, is like, you don't sound that you're from Austria and Germany, and you're obviously, you get the humor, you get the culture, you blended perfectly into that world. As young, like aspiring actors, what was the original choice for you guys to go into a country where English would be your second language, as opposed to saying, well, I want to go to, I don't know, the and this is just examples like Berlin Theater, or let's go to join the, let's go to Munich where like there's all these production companies, go to Cologne where the TV, you know, stations are. Why go so far from where you would have had options in your mother tongue?
Tim, I'll let you start with that.
I mean, for me, I feel like I was fortunate enough that I went to an international school in Germany, so I learned English from a young age. Mm-hmm. So like going to live in an English speaking country wasn't very daunting to me. I felt more comfortable speaking in English anyway. And I guess I just always, there was just something about New York or just America in general. Like as a kid, you'd go there on holidays sometimes, and like you'd walk into a Foot Locker and the way it smelled, like I still remember, and like the air conditioning just felt really nice, and like the shopping malls and all that stuff. And I just like, from a very young age, I always thought, like, I really want to live in America. And that's where Michael Jordan lived. So as a kid, I wanted to live where Michael Jordan lived. So it always had to be America. And then as I got older, I just thought, New York seems like the best place to go. And so I went here after high school. I graduated high school and just came here for acting school immediately. And pretty much haven't left ever since. So I would consider myself a New Yorker at this point.
Yeah.
My visa wouldn't, but I would. My visa says I'm here on an O-1, but I say I'm a real New Yorker.
A real New Yorker. You started doing the whole thing.
Hey, how about this?
I'm walking here.
I'm walking. Can't even do a proper accent. Can't even do a proper New York accent. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's sad, really.
I mean, look, for me, I've spent most of my life growing up outside of Austria. You know, I was in Austria from like 2 until 10, and then we moved to Egypt, then I moved to Florida to pursue tennis.
I knew about Florida. I didn't know about Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt was a short stint. My dad worked there, so I was there in a British school. So, you know, I was around the English language much more already at that point. Moved to Florida, and then it was back and forth between Florida and Austria for a bit in those last years of playing tennis. But really, you know, at that point, then my brother was here in New York already, pursuing music and some acting as well. And so at that point, like when I stopped playing, I just really wanted to live with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the acting was like, cool, I'll try it out. But nothing was like, okay, I definitely want to do this. I just wanted to get out of that scene, out of that like familiar environment. And, you know, it felt like the right place to be was with him. And then everything else just kind of followed suit from there.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense to have those connections to it before going there, especially. And I mean, Because whenever you think about people moving to America to pursue paths in entertainment, and I guess that's in this case more specific to Tim, who wanted to go to New York to pursue acting, I bet in the same way that I continuously get things of like, hey, you're an English-speaking entertainer, why don't you live in Berlin? Do you guys get the whole thing of like, why don't you go to L.A.? Or do you say, or do you think it's pretty much equal opportunity, or that question is kind of outdated at this point?
Yeah, I think so. I think at this point, New York has so many offerings that not really anymore.
Yeah.
I feel like you would get that question like years ago more, but I think in general also just like more and more people are just aware now that a lot of the stuff gets either shot in New York, or just also they know that, you know, a lot of stuff just gets shot on the go now with all the equipment, like how easy it is to shoot your own material or just for production companies to shoot stuff.
Yeah.
Or I just think, use AI to create it for you, you know?
Or do AI, which is the best.
Yeah, it's honestly, it looks great. Like, I just saw the Marvel intro for the Nick Fury show. It's just AI, and it's brilliant.
But
it
looks
so well done.
So good.
It looks so real. I think it works on so many levels that people don't even understand.
Let me ask you guys, because, I mean, you're both registered, you know, actors. How has the current strike... How has the current strike affected you, if at all, and have you been a part of you know, projects that have undergone changes or delays because of that? Have you gone, you know, to the picket lines yourselves? How is that affecting you currently?
I mean,
or is it?
I mean,
or,
not, you know, not really, I mean, because so much of our work is production, but like social media production, which hasn't been affected. And then in terms of us, obviously, like, you know, it's just Tim and I. What was the rest of the question?
We haven't been to the strikes.
We haven't been to the strikes. No,
we're bad, but we're gonna hand out water.
Yeah. I just wasn't sure if, I mean, I know that your work is different, but I just wasn't sure if there had been like, oh, well, you know, I auditioned for this thing and it was going to get picked up, but right well, we now did. We're stuck in limbo with so, that. Or
yes, somewhat. We are part of a project that, we are part of a project that is being delayed because of that. But, you know, that's sort of like, I think the usual thing of like, any type of project, it could have been delayed for other reasons, and it has been delayed for other reasons in the past, you know, i.e. financing, finding a studio, etc., etc. And we're a small part of it, so it hasn't like affected us deeply in any way. It's more just like, oh, okay, cool, this is pushed back further, like let's see what happens and when it comes back.
For sure. And I mean, especially I think for content creators who can make a living based off, I mean, in y'all's case, especially having over a million YouTube subscribers, you're probably making quite a lot of just your regular income from doing what you love and creating those things yourselves. I had on the last episode that came out, I interviewed Liam Carpenter, this Liam Carps guy.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah. He just followed us on Instagram. We had to make sure to follow back because we've seen his stuff before too. Yeah, another German content creator.
Totally. Yeah. And he's,
there's how many of us?
You know, well, I was talking.
You got to plan a getaway,
dude. My goal. I have like a list of like I don't know. I have on this Word document. I don't know if it's like 8 or 9, but there's. I wonder if you guys know all the same people that I'm trying to get to know. Because I think also think like it'd be nice to build a community of the people who have this sort of angle that we're in, so that we can be in a position of like, hey, well, you know, they have a podcast. Maybe I can be a guest, or hey, let's do a video together. Or, you know, just
honestly, what a mindfuck it would be if we all got together for one video.
It would be
just
one big
dude. Germany's shitty Wi-Fi would explode.
Oh my god!
If they had you guys, Liam Uyen, the Vietnamese creator, and Chris DeSis, the black American girl living in a village in Germany she's almost at 1 million on TikTok. There's like,
oh yeah, yeah, I think I've seen
she's
stuff
so her. Funny. Yeah. She's so funny. There's a few on different platforms who have like huge numbers. And I think if we all did it together, Germany's system can't hold that kind of response, I think.
Oh my God, no. Yeah, how is the Wi-Fi for you over there? Because like, I feel like whenever I go to visit my parents and it's just like,
oh my God,
what
it's
is
brutal.
This?
Oh.
What? Is this?
I'm not kidding. At my parents, I get a 5 megabit download speed. It is
5
awful.
Megabit download. Okay, I don't have it that bad.
I can see you very well right now. Yeah.
I admit, like I'm lucky. You know, I'm in Munich city limits, and I'm in a new place now. I'm in a house where the underground is turned into a studio, and the router that connects to not the glass, I guess they don't really have the fiberglass yet, but like the direct line to the system is next to this door. So like here in this room where I do the calls, it's the best version of Wi-Fi that I'll probably get anywhere else. So I'm very, very lucky for that. But I have been in different apartments before living here. That it was just a horrendous joke, like sending WeTransfer and even just an audio file for whatever reason, forget about it, dude. It would take like hours. Just a joke, just painful. I wanted to ask, I know that you guys have had to learn different skills. Oh, no, I remember the first question I wanted to ask was, the reason I brought up Liam was, so when he crossed, he's crossed 1 million on TikTok and Instagram both. And when I asked him about what that feeling must have been like to cross that platform, because I think for me as a creator, I have certain goals that I hope to cross. And I think when I get to that number, probably a part of me will be able to relax a little bit on that sort of lingering fear that the numbers will go away. It won't.
That's what you tell yourself. That's what you tell yourself.
No. Yeah. That's what you tell yourself. Getting up to it.
But the question was basically like, okay, I mean, I assume that's the reality, but when he got to that number, let's say like the definitive like 1 mil, did he have a moment of reflection and celebration to appreciate what he'd worked on? And I imagine in y'all's case, for 1 million on YouTube means so much more, in my opinion. Not more like worth, but like it's a really difficult accomplishment to get to 1 million on YouTube. What happened when you guys crossed that and you got the plaque? What was that conversation like for you guys when that happened? It's huge.
It was a text.
It was a text message. Hey, we did it. We got a million.
Congrats.
Congrats, bro.
Shut up, you Germans. Back to work.
Calvin texted me and I left him on read for like an hour or two, and then I wrote back and I said,
not true. Nice. Not true. We were obviously a little bit more excited than that.
I mean, come on. It's good to be proud. It's good to be proud.
Yeah. We were pumped during the week leading up to it.
Of course. And like, as Tim said, like the week leading up to it, we kept talking about it. Like, what day are we hitting it? You know? And it was obviously very exciting. I think there is that sense of like, when you hit that number, things are going to change. All of a sudden, like, all of the companies are going to come flocking to you and are going to be like, we want to work with you. We're going to pay you $20,000 for this ad. And like, you know, that didn't really pan out that way. It's a lot more complex than that. Obviously, it came with some perks and you do have a better rate that you're able to ask for because of that. I think just in general, it also looks nicer, you know, than having 900,000 followers. Yeah. You can just have the 1M. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we were excited, and then it was kind of like back to work because there's, you know, like it's that sense of like if you don't keep up with it, people are going to fall off. Your audience is not going to care or not going to keep up. Like, you know, as nice as it is to have the 1 million on YouTube, a lot of that is still based off of shorts, which is, you know, similar to the TikTok and Instagram process. You know, so I think part of us has always felt like, not that it's like cheating, but that it's like, you know, it's not like the 1 million that you would get off of building long form videos. And so now we've really tried to branch out into long form more, and we've had some more success with it, which is really nice. But, you know, we have to keep up with it and we have to keep doing it so that we build a more diverse audience.
In terms of your social media outreach, because I mean, you have quite a widespread audience. Like, I can only speak from my own experience, but I think I would probably be making a good-ish living or more of a living if they hadn't canceled out a monetization for Reels on Instagram.
That was nuts. And it came out of the blue without an announcement.
It's cold-blooded, man. Like, that's where that's the most of where my audience is. And I can't make money from that unless I do these brand partnerships, which, you know, as you guys know, isn't every week.
Nope.
You know, it comes and goes, and 100%. Sometimes you have stretches of time where you just aren't sure, like, is it going to happen at all? What do you think now? Because in the position you are now, what has continued to be, or what are new struggles that you find as social media creators?
I think the weekly like upkeep, that's the hardest part, like coming up with new ideas,
the consistency, right?
But then also, like, looking at Kyle, something that he did is like, okay, cool, how can we do something that's not the same thing? You know, like, as much as we enjoy doing the German stuff, there is that sense of like, we don't want to always just do that or just be known for that. Like, we want to branch out from that. Like, we love doing comedy of different kinds. So how can we? You know, so it's mainly about playing around with that. And thankfully, we've had some success. Like, recently, we did a video that mocked the whole, like, NPC live TikTok trend, and that's doing really well. And you know, it's like 2.2 million views or something right now on YouTube. But that's really like, how can we branch out and do something different than what we've been doing? And you know, at this point we've posted like 280 videos or something, so like, you know, keeping up with that is not the easiest thing.
It's coming up with new ideas every week. And, you know, you have to put out, you know this, like, you have to put out, I mean, we're already pretty slow about how we roll out our videos. I feel like you're more prolific in that way, where you're like putting out, what, like 5 videos a week or something?
I wouldn't use the word prolific. I mean, but, like, every time that there's a new leap in numbers, I have no problem re-releasing, republishing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll take, like...
See, that's something that we struggle with, and we don't really do it because we feel like it's cheap. But, there is something to be said about taking something off and republishing it, or, like, you know, taking something old and throwing it up again.
Right now, as it stands, I put something every day.
Wow.
And like most weeks is something new. Of course, it's not all the same quality, but there's something new 7 days a week. And like sometimes like there's just a weekend where someone has a birthday or I'm traveling or I don't feel good or I'm just, I just like hate it. Don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
But there's still that machine of like, okay, well, 4 months ago, I did a thing about Germans going to a lake that did well. Now I have, you know, whatever, 40K more than I did when I dropped that. I'll just republish it.
That's smart.
And it'll do about the same or better. And I didn't have to do anything that day.
Yeah, fair enough. That's, I mean, that's good. I think that's something that we can definitely learn from or something we...
I mean, with you guys too, like I understand YouTube's a different machine, but for TikTok or Instagram, people encourage it. You know, that they, I had to feel convinced to do it. And then when I started doing it, it didn't hurt anything. It only helped.
Yeah. I feel like it was like, it's like the same with like that those like two girls, the, what are they called? Like rapping girls on TikTok, you know, the ones where they just run, they just like run towards the camera.
And oh, like the girl who's like, Jesus Christ, Donna, something like Donna.
Cinnamon. I don't know. They did it at Disney World. They did it at like Taco Bell or something at Chipotle and stuff. And like they keep on doing that same video, but it still gets the same numbers, gets that even more and more engagement.
Totally. Totally.
So, yeah.
What was the first moment, like your first video where you guys came together and kind of said, well, we should probably keep doing this. Like, this is doing pretty well. Was it on, what platform was it on, and where did you guys, I mean, probably it wasn't that like movie-esque, but where was like the wave hitting, and which platform where you were like, hey, let's do another one of those. That did really well.
Oh, we started out on TikTok. Like TikTok was where we got our start. And I think the first, like we'd done a few videos and it was just, you know, you were doing it for the love of the game. And I was just hanging out with my buddy during COVID and just making short videos. So it was always fun. Like I never was like, oh, we should stop doing this because we're not getting the views. Like it was still just enjoyable to do. And then I think like the first one that got like a little bit of traction was something when like Robin Hood shut down like all the trading for like the AMC stock and something. And like we did like a short video on that. And I think that got like,
it got 40K views.
And like we did like called the WWE pay-per-view, and then like we got out and had like 45K views or something. And like before that all our videos had gotten like 200 views, and like this had like 45,000 views, and we were like, oh my god, dude, is this viral?
So
we're like, oh shit, we gotta hit them hard the next time with an even better one, because we're celebrities now.
We gotta keep this fire burning. Yeah, baby.
Yeah. But we did, you know, like...
I totally get that, by the way.
To be honest, we were very lucky because it was our 11th video that went viral, which was the Cars video. You know, it was this... We did a stitch to this video that was like... what was it, Tim? It was like, what's your country most famous for? Something
claim to fame or something silly.
Yeah, something like that. And it was like, Tim and I in the video, we're Germans, so it's World War, and then I cut him off, and I say Cars.
I remember
cars,
that one. Yes. I remember that one.
So that one was like our 11th video. It went viral. You know, it got like 20 million views in like 4 days or something. Like it did really, really, or like 15 million. But it was an insane amount. And then we were like, Tim had come up with the ideas like, oh, what if we do German children's stories? Because those are so insane and like so crazy.
The Struwwelpeter.
Yeah, exactly. So we followed it up with that because I think there was a comment in there like Germans are funny. And so at that time, you could do the whole like responding, well, you still can, but like you could do responding to a comment with a video, which helped us so much because at that point, that video was still getting a lot of views and we just... you know, tacked it onto that, and it was kind of like a snowball effect. And then people started really enjoying the German children's stories, and then we just kind of kept up with that. And then at some point, like, the German thing just clearly stuck around from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you guys are familiar with the concept of audience capture. Have you ever heard that before?
No.
No.
It's something that you touched on earlier. I made a note so that I would bring it up when we have the next... thing, but audience capture is a really interesting concept. You can just throw it into a Google tab to look at later because I don't remember who came up with it. But the general gist.
Oh, you have to show somebody five times or something?
No, is that the thing? The
I feel like I read about this recently on Twitter or something.
You have to show somebody five times? What do you mean?
It's like you want to post, like, if a video is like a hit, you should post it like around like five times, like the same cycle, no, so that more viewers can see it. I don't know. It's something, whatever.
Continue. I know what you're talking about, but this is totally different. This is this is like a sociological thing that was recently studied that is basically the idea. People like us and creators who are on, like, you know, completely different levels of attention for their niche or whatever, can sometimes be trapped by the character or the niche that they create that gets that audience. And a good example that they use in this article that I read was Nikocado Avocado. You know the YouTuber who eats like mukbangs, this white dude with the black hair?
Oh yes.
And he's like their prime example of getting trapped kind of by, you know, you make a video where you, let's say you eat a couple of cheeseburgers for some reason, this is just like what happened, and the audience was, you know, tenfold what he had done for his violin music. He was a violinist.
Yeah.
And like a vegan. But then he started doing like sort of subtle, like overeating things, and the comments were flooding with like the next thing he should do. And it became like, well, if I need to do what they're doing so that I can get the numbers. And it becomes that vicious thing where they got trapped. He got trapped into what the audience wants. And now you see these videos of him, and yeah, he's at 6 million subscribers. And yeah, you know, his five channels or whatever make him so much money, but he looks just so trapped by the thing that he built. I was wondering, do you guys, when you think about branching out, where would you want to, what kind of humor or video making would you want to step into? Do you imagine making short films, doing dramatic acting? Like, you know, I'm not saying that I think either of us feel stuck by that yet, but that's a concept that I think is really prominent in our world. Like, do you think you see that in other people, and how you'd want to separate yourself from what you do now?
I mean, I think it's hard to see it in other people because you know, obviously never know what they're actually going through and how they feel about the position they're in. There's still a sense of like, you know, yes, we've definitely felt that to a degree of like, is this the only thing that is, you know, successful for us and that people respond to? Luckily, we have seen success in other formats too. Like I just mentioned, even with the TikTok NPC trend, but like it's happened with a coffee video, and like there's enough examples of us being like, okay, cool, we're not just like, you know, doing good numbers with that. Of course, the German thing, I think just in general, especially in the US, people gravitate towards that so very much, and they enjoy that stereotypical German character. So not necessarily, but I think, like, you know, from my perspective, something that I know we've talked about a lot is like, we both love, you know, I Think You Should Leave style, like Tim and Eric, like that type of comedy, you know, so like branching out in towards that, we've even talked about at some point doing like a short horror film, you know, just something that's fun and that might feed the like creative aspects of us. And from there, yeah, you know, kind of just see where it goes. But I think, you know, steering too far away from comedy was never really anything that we've talked about or like wanted to do, except for like the occasional one-offs if it is something like a short horror film.
And I think the greatest like ongoing bit or like comedy content that has been created is Tim Heidecker's On Cinema, and I feel like that's something I would like to, I just don't know what it is. You know, it's just nice to have, I feel like if you have like such an expansive universe where you know your characters so well, and you're basically just able to improv and just do like the most insane stuff, that's something that I would like to build towards too. We haven't found the characters really for that yet, and like what it is, and like, cause like him and Greg Turkington do it. So I don't know if you know On Cinema, but it's like Siskel and Ebert.
I know. Oh, okay. No, I know Tim Heidecker, like, but like I don't think I know.
It started off as a podcast and then went to like a YouTube show. It's like basically it's two losers just reviewing movies, and it's incredible. It's the best. There's nothing better than On Cinema. And what they have, I think they're at like season 13 now or something, and what they've built over like 13 years is incredible. Like how far they went with stuff. It's insane.
We've mentioned Tim Heidecker and Tim Robinson, who are like some of the greatest comedic minds, I mean, at least of our you know, time, our generation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who are a couple of other people that maybe people wouldn't expect, or who are just a couple of writers or entertainers that you individually look at and say, holy shit, that is the goal. That's what you should be doing.
Oh, I mean,
I think those take the win for me.
Oh, there's I mean, Larry David, obviously. The It's Always Sunny guys. There's a writer who like sadly passed away years ago. His name was Harris Whittles, and he wrote on Parks and Rec, and he was like one of the greatest comedic minds of all time. And he came up with the phrase humble brag. That was Harris Whittles.
That is
I think my icon is Harris Whittles. He's one of the goats. Just look up Harris Whittles on Comedy Bang Bang, where he does terrible puns that annoy everybody.
Oh, he was on Comedy Bang Bang. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he's like a staple of Comedy Bang Bang.
I don't know why I don't know his face by that name. Maybe I've seen it before and I don't know, but
oh, I'm sure you may have heard it. It's one of like the earlier episodes. He was part of the Farts and Procreations crew.
Farts and Procreations.
If you're a real Comedy Bang Bang fan, you'll know what that is.
Oh man, I have a buddy in New Orleans named Corey Dumasnil who is
that
going
sounds
to
like a Comedy
literally
Bang Bang name.
Yeah, Dumasnil. He's gonna melt into a pile of pudding hearing everything you've just listed.
Great.
Like that is he was my improv troupe teacher. He was our improv group leader when I was in college. And he taught me like everything I knew about that specific. We did mostly short form with him, but like that was my guy. And then he was like, "Well, then you might like this." And it was like all the Comedy Bang Bang stuff. And I was like, "Oh, Scott Ackerman. Oh, okay." And then like it just bled into all these people. And then I started knowing. I started like getting into who's the writer for this episode. Like who's the writer behind? And then I had.
Oh my God! I know.
You grow up and you're watching The Office. You're like. Oh, I think I've heard of BJ Novak. You don't think about it being like about him being Ryan, of course, but like also just getting into the writers like, oh, the writer behind Conan or like.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Jason Mantzoukas wrote on this show. Great.
Dude. Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's so impressive. And I,
oh, yeah, nothing cooler than being really into improv comedy. It shows that you're a real cool guy.
How do you guys, speaking of nerding out, how do you guys, are you guys in relationships and how are things in like, you know, outside of the social media stuff, you know, for the deep fans who are excited to know a little bit more about you, what's the private life like, you know?
Oh, shit. Well, I have a lovely girlfriend that I live with and, we have a cat and a dog and,
You guys are both living with your partners, like in your own places?
Yeah. I'm not
well,
yet.
Well, Calvin isn't yet. But.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to move in together next year. But yes, I have a lovely girlfriend as well. She has a cat. I have a dog. So those will soon be pals
guys,
as well.
The dog wants
to be friends with the cat more than the cat wants to be friends with the
dog.
You
guys can't both have a lovely girlfriend and a cat and a dog.
That's right. We are lucky guys with lovely girlfriends and cats and dogs.
We're just very lucky guys. What can we say?
You guys strike me as people who like have been so integrated in U.S. culture for so long that you probably don't have many things that you miss from home. Like, do you guys travel back home much?
Oh, I thought you were going to say because we're so into improv comedy, we probably don't have girlfriends. But in your fucking face, bro.
Why do you think I asked about private lives first, Tim? I'm an interviewer. I'm not an idiot.
Okay.
Oh, man.
No, you guys probably don't have things you miss much from home, or do you go home much? Or what is this?
I'm actually about to fly home.
Yeah?
So I'm flying home on Monday. Well, it's Friday. I don't know when you're putting this out, but I'm flying home August 7th, for anybody who cares, if anybody's on the Lufthansa flight to Munich.
There we go.
Go up to Calvin, tell him you like his work.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, I just recently...
You can touch
recently,
him.
Recently, both Tim and I nerd out whenever somebody comes up to us on the street, and like then we text each other.
Oh, it's the
when
best.
Somebody's like, hey, I love your guys' stuff.
Love it.
And it usually happens when we're together, just because I think, you know, the stark height difference and like...
That's mentioned a lot, by the way.
Just the image
that's
of us together.
That's mentioned a lot in the interviews I've seen.
Yeah, I mean... I'm 5'7", he's 6'3". You know, it's like, it's just, it's very obvious. But
that's so funny.
Recently, I had a kid come up to me and he asked for a photo. And that was the very first time. It was like a 12-year-old guy. He was with his mom. They were walking their dog. And the mom was like, oh, he talks about you guys all the time. This is going to make his day. So like that was a really, really nice experience. So if anybody on the Lufthansa flight wants to take a photo, just know you'll make my day. So
sweet. Otherwise, Calvin will go around and just ask if anybody wants to take a photo with him.
Yeah, he's I'll show him the YouTube channel and be like, hey, look, I'm famous.
Here's the breakdown of what we have. Would you like a picture?
You just made your YouTube plaque into a necklace like Flava Flav with the clock.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, I should. That would be great.
Ladies?
Well, not ladies, no.
Yep, guys?
Man?
Dudes?
Fellas?
Flight attendants?
Where my fellas at? Oh man, that's so funny. I feel like, like in Munich and Berlin especially, like if I feel that I'm starting to get like stopped occasionally for the videos, it must be a whole different level for you guys or like for Liam or something.
Maybe for Liam.
Maybe
I could
for
see
Liam.
It for Liam.
I could see that, yeah. But I feel
I mean, you guys getting stopped in New York is a next level, though. I feel like if you guys were in Berlin or Munich or somewhere in Germany, it would probably be four or five times as many notices, don't you think?
I don't know, because the majority of our audience is still U.S.-based.
Yeah. So maybe if like, we walked through like a Minnesota or something, like a very German...
We did. We got recognized at the airport in Chicago wearing masks. I remember that.
Whoa.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
That was pretty cool, yeah. But...
Yeah.
What's the have you guys I mean, besides these you know, cool creators like Kyle or Scumbag, have you guys met people that you idolized, just like the casual New York encounter where you were like, hey, oh my god, like I love what you do? Have you guys had any nice interactions like that?
Like, you mean as people or as like creators? Like, we actually shot with people?
Both.
I mean, I met when I was in acting school, I was walking home and I met Philip Seymour Hoffman, and that was pretty awesome. When he was doing Death of a Salesman on Broadway, and I shook his hand and I told him that I loved him.
Oh
man, I'm so jealous
that I had the same acting teacher that he once had, and if he wanted to come to our acting class and talk to us, and he was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Whatever, get out of here, tall boy.
He was like, oh, that sounds great.
He's like, quit holding my hand.
Yeah, let go, please. You got really sweaty hands. Why are you crying?
I could see him being nice about it, though.
Oh, he was
probably nice about it, no?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Rest in peace to the goat.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can't say that I have. I can't say that I've had that experience yet. I mean, honestly, I get to have that experience multiple times a week with Tim.
Oh,
so
isn't that
what
true?
More do I
there
need?
There you go. There you go.
And I think that's a great out for us on this podcast.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I won't keep you guys any longer. I just want to say, lastly, have you guys ever been to New Orleans? I have to ask that.
Yes.
Once.
We got a tattoo.
First WrestleMania.
Got a tattoo because of our visit to New Orleans.
I went to a WrestleMania in New Orleans. I might have been at the same one you guys were at and just didn't know you.
The one in 2018?
Yeah, that would have been ours. It was WrestleMania.
The one in 2018?
Yeah.
No, probably not. Oh, maybe, actually. Yes.
Oh, then you were at our first WrestleMania that we called live.
It was so random. I must have been at that one, unless it was 2017. And they don't do it every year, right? They don't do it every year.
No, the one before that was WrestleMania 30, which would have been...
Oh, you know, maybe it was just a...
No, not WrestleMania 30. Wasn't WrestleMania 30 on Bourbon Street, too?
On Bourbon Street.
Was it? Oh, yeah, because there was another one where Brian,
Miracle of Bourbon
where Brian
Street.
Won it. Yeah.
I wonder if it was just because there's like there's this huge venue that's uptown. It's like it's not the Superdome, but it's like the, you know, whatever the Hertz blah 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 building.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it was at the
WrestleMania
Superdome.
WrestleMania was at Superdome.
Then you may have been
okay,
there.
Okay, so
the other ones there.
I was at a wrestling event, but not WrestleMania. Okay, that's what it was.
Gotcha.
Fun story about that. So, yeah, we... It was our first WrestleMania, so we got tattoos. Both, I got mine on my foot, and Tim got it on his shin, right?
Yeah.
We got tattoos afterwards to commemorate, because they had, on Bourbon Street, they had these very sugary drinks that we were having.
Oh, dude,
hand
that's,
grenades.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah.
So that's a classic.
When we went to Philly, we both had a drink or two, and we went and we got tattoos of a hand grenade, and I always wore ties sitting ringside, and Tim would wear bow ties. So I got a hand grenade with a bow tie. Tim got a hand grenade with a tie.
That's nice, man. That's really nice.
Yeah, it was very sweet.
And then on Bourbon Street, I got knocked down by a horse twice. I got hit in the face by a horse, and Tim stood there and watched.
Did you film it?
What am I going to do? I'm going to get shot by the cops.
The first time it hit me, I like went down to the floor hard, and I got up trying to reorientate myself. And instead of pulling me away, I just hear from afar, Calvin, Calvin, bam. Second time.
You look over like in your like unconscious blur, you see him giving money to the cop. Like, good shot. Good shot, man.
And again. Do it again.
That's great. Man.
It is insane. It is insane that they rode through a crowded street with horses and
well,
like,
they did the whole like spin around thing to like clear people. It's
yeah.
If somebody would have caught that on camera now, I feel like there would be uproar. This was 2018. This is a different time.
It's a different time, dude. Pre-pandemic is a different world. And honestly,
it really was. It really was.
In New Orleans, they get away with much worse. Like that's my home.
Oh yes.
I go back there. That's where I visit every year. And they've always had a little flavor for pushing the boundaries.
Oh yeah.
That's what you love to hear.
There's no better place to go home to than when you live in Munich, like the city of rules and structure. And you go back to New Orleans where it's like a cage match in WWE,
it's
like
a free for all.
Like the ladder with the briefcase, you know?
I mean, dude, just going back home and like jaywalking it's just people look at you like you just committed murder. It's
totally
like,
I asked
every single time.
I asked Liam what was something that he brings back with him, like societally, when he goes back to the UK. And he was like, well, I wait for red lights now in Kent, or where I think he's from Kent. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I think about it. I still don't do it, but I think about it.
Oh, I did when I first arrived in New York. I remember it was like literally like out of a movie. I was like, I like arrived from the airport and like I took the bus into Midtown and got off at 42nd Street, and I'm just standing there with like my big bag, like looking at the red light while everybody else is walking across. And I'm just like, how do I get
they're hustling in their suits. Exactly. And like
texting. Just got into a cab and I feel like I got ripped off, because there's no way that from Midtown to 14th Street it cost $35 back then.
Meh.
No, not back then. Not back then. No, I was like
depended how long he stalled.
Yeah, exactly. Even back then, I was like, this seems pretty expensive. I didn't know camps were this expensive.
This is Bichon Toya.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, thank you so, so, so much for being on the podcast and taking the time. It's so cool that I'm so glad we could make all the timing work. I know it was like kind of a roller coaster, but I know everyone's busy, so I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us, man.
Yeah, this has been really lovely. We can start our goodbyes and cut the audio, then we can do our real goodbyes.
Oh my god. Oh yeah. Okay. Fun. All right.
Goodbye.
Tschüss mit du und ciao mit au.
Bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.